Over the Mall is brought to you by Soccer America. Soccer America, the soccer paper of record. Go to socceramerica.com and sign up for your subscription today. More information on all our sponsors at overtheball.com/sponsors.
Hey, this is Bob Lee, and you're listening to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn, the world's game from an American perspective.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn and Dave Gallego. Today on OTB, the legendary Bob Leonarduzzi. This is a guy, Dave, you and I watched him growing up when he was playing in the NASL for the Whitecaps, and the guy had legs like tree trunks. I remember looking at him. Oh, my God. Do you remember him? I mean, it was huge. Okay, Bronco Nagurski. Now, there's a name for you. Anyway, it'll be great to catch up with Bob. He's one of the, you know, basically the trailblazers of this game in America. I think we see how far soccer's come in North America and in America, and we kind of sometimes forget whence we came. So
yeah, and now Leonarduzzi holds the record for the most games played in the NASL, and he's been a part of them for all 50 years of existence. So looking forward to getting some of his insight and some of his stories from yesteryear.
Yeah, and I want to hear about they have a big match coming up with TNT about the Copa America leagues, just trying to qualify and just see what he thinks about the Premier League in Canada right now. So I don't know. You know, when I was playing, when I was in college and before, some great players were coming out of Canada. And then it seemed like they really went through a dry spell there. But, you know, maybe if recent games are any indication, the Canadian national team played much, much better these last couple times against the United States. Played better than them in some instances. So Canada soccer on the up and up, hopefully. So we'll check in with Bob Leonarduzzi and see what his thoughts are on it. No one would know better than him. Our women, a big win, Dave, huh?
A very good win. Excellent. They played great. It was an entertaining game. So much much different than the game prior against Canada, the aforementioned Canada. It really was a great, great, great game. Huge crowd in San Diego. The girls played great. Brazil played fantastic. Also, they had some real, real tough breaks and some great opportunities. So I was very entertained by this game. Very pleased for the women.
Yeah, our sponsor, one of our sponsors, Soccer America, Mike Wojtola, has a nice article on it about, you know, the rebuilding has begun for the U.S. women's national team. So it should be interesting to follow them. A big weekend here. I went to a big party, watched Liverpool, Man City. That was an interesting game. What are your thoughts? I'm going to tell you what I think in a minute, but what were your thoughts watching the game? Did you see it?
I did not see it.
Oh, I should have asked you before.
I did not see it, but we can edit that out and I can bullshit you for a little bit.
I tell you something, that was, I guarantee you the ratings are going to be huge because people were having parties to see the game. I'd love to see it because, boy, I'd never gone to a big party like that to watch a Premier League or soccer game ever in my life.
Not this country, anyway.
Other than World Cup stuff, maybe. So it was exciting. Sit with a lot of Man City fans. They didn't have it on the day, Man City. I thought Liverpool was the better side, which kind of surprised me a little bit. But as a former midfielder, I just got to say that I think the game was won in the midfield with Endo and McAllister. Just they were the engine rooms in there. They were winning balls, knocking support. And you win balls in the midfield, you get it up to the big dogs to feed, you know, Salah and the other strikers they have. So they should have won. I thought Liverpool should have had the game, but now they're it's a tight, tight race at the top of the Premier League table.
With 10 games left, and I guess they tied that up with a second-half PK, right?
Yeah, but, you know, there were a couple of – you know, each side had a couple of chances, but at the end of the day, I think Liverpool played a better round of games. So, all right, so let's take a break right there, Dave, and when we come back, we'll be with our guest, Bob Leonarduzzi. You're listening to Over the Ball. Welcome back to Over the Ball, everybody. Joining us now, the legendary Bob Leonarduzzi. Bob, it is. I can call you Bob, hopefully. I know it's Robert, but you were a guy that I watched play growing up in the NASL. You were a trailblazer for this game in North America. And boy, you played in a lot of games. How are your legs and ankles and knees feeling these days, Bob?
I have two new hips. and I'm convinced that we used to play on tartan turf at the old Empire Stadium in Vancouver. That much turf and then blacktop underneath. So not a surprise that in fact, my knees are good, which I'm thankful for. But yeah, I think the hip surgeries were as a result of that turf for sure.
Well, you know, Bob, you look fantastic, Bob. I feel like you can get back into action right now.
I can't. I can up here, but not physically.
That's oh well, you know,
I can play the game from here. Yeah, I
mean, you hold the record for the most games played in the league in the NASL. So, if there's anybody that can give us great tidbits about the NASL, it's you. And needless to say, we are tremendous fans of the NASL and obviously soccer in general. So, just to drive home that point, we had Ricky Davis on last week.
Yes, and he was the North American Soccer Player of the Year in 1978, and I was in 1979. The big, wonderful acknowledgement, don't get me wrong, but he got 10 grand for winning the award. I didn't get any money. The sponsor, and I'm not going to say who they are, they pulled out, and I think it might have been because I was Canadian. Nah, I'm just joking. I'm sure that wasn't the case.
Bob, I think they just ran out of money, probably, is what happened.
Probably. You
know, one of the things we try to do on this show is to talk about some of the legends of the past who have made the game possible what it is today. I mean, you know, Bob, you would know this. I mean, my God, how hard players like yourself fought to make this a viable entity in North America. And, you know, Ricky Davis, John Harkes, all these guys who try to we had Willie Roy on as well a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
I don't want people to forget those that have come before them. So, and looking at your, you know, your background, doing my little due diligence before you got on, some of the things I didn't know about you. First of all, you were born in Vancouver, but at 15 years old, you went over to England and played for Reading. Talk about a little bit your development as a player, how you got to be that good at 15 in Vancouver. And then going over to England was pretty ballsy at the time. Nobody was doing it.
No, and actually I was 14 when I went over, just to hammer the point home even more how young I was. But I went to Reading, and how that happened was the coach of Reading at that time was actually in Vancouver. We had a Western Canada Soccer League that was around for a couple of years. And my two older brothers played with the Vancouver Spartans, the team at that time. And I just followed in their footsteps. They were wonderful mentors. And so the opportunity came up to go. I went, and I actually was there for 5 seasons. The early part of it was the most interesting, in my opinion. Whenever I tell the story, people just can't fathom it.
So you went to Reading at 14?
Yes. 14 years of age, and was playing up at that time, out of youth soccer, and that's the best thing that ever happened to me, because physically, it was a whole different proposition. You get knocked on your ass on a regular basis, and as a result of that, the coach of the team that I went to, Reading, at the time we were in the third division, had asked me to if I was interested in a tryout. So I went to Reading. I arrived 14 years of age, and I'm just have stars in my eyes. And one day I'm going to play at Wembley, and I get led on my first day. I get led to the boot room, and all the boots are on the pegs, and I'm thinking, well, this is nice. They're asking me to pick my size and make, and get told that these five, this row of boots here, you will shine those shoes after the senior guys come in from training, have them ready for them to pick up the next day. Had to sweep the terracing because at that time it was all terraces. And so that is what we do in the afternoon, and then I train in the mornings. And it was try and do that now. Never going to happen.
No.
And so, but for me, I have to look back on it and think, you know what? It was a character building process. I had to do all these other things as a result of trying to achieve my goal of becoming a professional soccer player.
So a couple of quick questions I want to ask, and then Dave, let you jump in here. First of all, I think you probably had some ability because your brothers were kicking your ass every day in the backyard.
Sure.
And by the way, Kev, I do want to interject that all three brothers played professionally.
Right.
All in the NASL, too.
And we all got on the field at the same time in a game against San Jose in 1978. We'd won the game 6-0. I'd scored 2 goals. And we all had a touch of the ball on my second goal as well. So proud day for mom and dad.
Mom and dad. Doozy in the house.
I actually grew up like a 5-minute walk away from the stadium. That's how close I was. So my mom never went to the games, but she'd sit out on the porch. She'd know how we were doing just by the roar of the crowd. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, you mentioned going over there at 14, and, you know, something that struck me is something Christian Pulisic said, where he said, you know, he felt the most important ages for development to really take yourself to that next level is about 14 to 16, 17 right there. So I think you might not have known it at the time, but you probably went there right when you were the most impressionable. And, you know, you could suck it in like a sponge, all that knowledge.
There's no doubt about that, because I would never have got the day-to-day training here. It didn't exist. Right. So you get thrown in at the deep end. I was as homesick as could be, but always driven by the fact that I wanted to be a professional soccer player. And this was the path I chose. Having said all that, when I got to, when the NASL started, not NASL, but the Whitecaps started in 1974, I was on loan back to Vancouver for two seasons from Reading, which is kind of ironic, but it was great because I could come home during the summer, go back there and play in the winter. But little did I know, when those first couple of years, it was friends and family in the crowd. And it all took off for the Whitecaps in 1977 when we hired Tony Waiters. And I'm sure you're well aware of him.
Of course.
Had the success getting us to the World Cup in 86, won the Soccer Bowl in 79. So the difference between 74 and 79 is it's just incredible how far the game had gone in those 5 years since us joining the league. 1979, you were playing in front of 40,000 in Seattle, 40,000 in Minnesota. We played against the Cosmos in 79, knocked them out at Giant Stadium in front of 50,000 plus people.
We might have been there.
Bob, and you know what? Actually, you're kind of stealing my thunder here, which is not appreciated, young man. I do have the thank God for YouTube, because you were actually able to watch that classic, and it is a classic. The playoff game, the Whitecaps at Giant Stadium, 1979, and the way the NASL did it, it was very unorthodox. They have, if the game ends in a tie, then you have the shootout, which, by the way, I think is much more entertaining than penalty kicks, but that's
no question.
A story for another day. But you guys, the Cosmos are up 2-1, and you guys, and they're on to the finals, the Soccer Bowl, which is actually going to be played at Giant Stadium. Yes. So you guys ended up tying them. And then you guys, speaking of unorthodox, you then had to go to another 30-minute playoff game, and basically that was a winner-take-all. And you guys won that, and the Giants, the Cosmos were stunned, so you had to play the Soccer Bowl at Giants Stadium. Tell us about that. It was an amazing game, and again, the entire game is available on YouTube.
It all comes down to the final shootout. And I'm trying to remember, I think it was Nelson Morales from the Cosmos that had the final shootout.
Yep.
He goes in, rounds the keeper, and actually knocks it a little bit farther ahead than I think he would have liked, because it's 5 seconds. You've got to get a shot off in. He gets the shot off. They're excited. We're looking at the clock that's over in the corner, and it's clear the time was up when he hit the shot. So it gets negated, and we're going to the Soccer Bowl, and they're not.
Yeah.
We weren't very popular. We weren't very popular with anyone outside of Vancouver, simply because I think everybody wanted to see the Cosmos hosting the final. We went back there the next week, and we're being booed relentlessly right from the outset. So we rained on their parade, but I can tell you what it did for Vancouver. We came back to Vancouver the next day, and the airport was full of people.
Fantastic.
We got on a bus. We went downtown, had a parade through the city center. The estimates are 100,000 people were in downtown Vancouver that day. And it was so, for a kid from Vancouver that grew up 15 or 5 minutes away from the stadium I played at, this was like heavenly. Having said all that, 5 years later, the league is going under.
Yeah.
This is all happening. And then I think we lost in 1980, five teams folded, 81, another five, 82, another five. We lost We lost 15 teams of the 24 teams, and then we lost another five, and that pretty much finished it off. And our last season was 1984. So when people ask me to compare NASL to MLS, NASL was lightning in a bottle. It came, it went. You guys were spectators at that time. You have fond memories of it. A lot of people do.
Yeah.
But MLS is here to stay. It's not right. going anywhere. When you've got owners investing, last San Diego was a $500 million to get into the league. Who would have ever suggested that even 10 years ago?
How about this? NYCFC, they're spending $700 million on a stadium. So, yeah. You know, go figure. That was more than the entire payroll for the NASL. I do want to just say a couple things. But getting back to that classic, you guys actually scored a goal, which this is pre-replay, that it went in and then it was called off. Brilliant. And then, again, Nelson Moraes' shot at the end. If you count, one, two, three. It kind of looked like he did score. So there was a lot of drama in that game. And I definitely recommend any old NASL fans to watch that game because it was a very, very entertaining game.
You were a Cosmos fan then, right?
Yes, of course.
Can you tell Bob? Yeah, yeah.
Jesus. Okay, well, that's why you thought he got the shot off in time then, right? Clearly, he did.
Well, look, guys.
I've gotten over it.
You know what, though? Just a great, great story that if you didn't follow the game in 1966, World Cup. I was 11 years old, watching on television at 5 o'clock in the morning with my brothers and my dad. And Alan Ball played in that game, was 19 years old at that time. He came to the Whitecaps 13 years later in 1979. So at the dinner before the soccer bowl game, they were handing out the individual awards. Franz Beckenbauer and Alan Ball are having a conversation. And I'm like a little kid that's just every word I'm listening intently to. They're talking about England winning the World Cup in 66, the ball off the bar, down. And they said, and they were comparing that to the soccer bowl. And I said, this is incredible. Two legendary players are talking about something that happened 13 years ago that was similar to what took place. It was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
All right. So let me put you guys in the time capsule and move you a little forward to get you out of NASL. Bob, I did see you play. I'm trying to remember where it was, but you had the biggest legs on the pitch. I'm like, if I had to defend against him, I think I'd need a chainsaw.
But they've shrunk. They've shrunk with age.
Let me ask you a couple of questions, though. Was your father born in Canada, or was he an immigrant?
They immigrated in the 50s from Italy. My two older brothers were born in Italy, 5 and 8 when they came over, and myself and my younger brother were born in Vancouver.
Yeah, see, because I always ask the question of, like, in America, in North America, really, like, how did you learn the secret language? You know, because it was, you know, soccer was this really, it was held by ethnic groups sort of playing, the Italians, the Germans, the Greeks, most of America, you know, middle America didn't know anything about it. You know, I mean, I played for a bunch of those teams and I saw this whole world. So I always like to find that out because it's usually some kid who's like, my father was in the World Bank or my father was a sergeant in Germany or, you know, the game. But you had a huge career as a player. Then you make the transition to coaching. And then eventually general managing, president and everything. How difficult was that? Because I always ask, as a player, you played for so long, you go from being a warrior to a philosopher, basically, as a coach. Make that transition sometimes for people.
Yeah, believe it or not, it wasn't. I had no intention of getting into coaching, but necessity is the mother of invention. I didn't really know what else I was going to do. And it was after the 86 World Cup, or prior to the 86 World Cup, Tony Waiters had, in his mind, had wanted a legacy of us qualifying for the World Cup for the first time in our history. He wanted a legacy for that. And as a result of that, it was the Canadian Soccer League, which was huge because it was a link between the original NASL and now MLS. So we played in the Canadian Soccer League. We played in the APSL. We played in the USL. We just hung in there. And so for me, I decided I would. Tony had said you should coach, and I said, "Well, I'm not sure. I don't really fancy doing that. It's right. like it's a job that you're hired to be fired. So I took it and had some success, won 4 Canadian Soccer League championships, and then went to coach the World Cup team for the 94 World Cup. And right. It's the closest we've been since this last group, thankfully, qualified. But we were down to the last game in Toronto against Mexico. Only one berth as well, one straight berth, and then there was a backdoor opportunity. And if we beat Mexico on that day, then we're going to the World Cup. And nobody had picked us prior to that. Anyways, we ended up losing. We were 1-1. We needed to win. We were pushing people forward. They scored the second goal, and it was late on in the game, and it was over. Then we had a backdoor game against Australia.
Australia.
2 games. We won 2-1 at home, lost 2-1 there, went to overtime in Australia, lost on penalty shots. But that wasn't it. Then you had to play the 5th place finisher in South America, and guess who it was that year? Argentina and Diego Maradona.
Oh, goodness.
Unbelievable.
And it was Maradona? They were the 5th place team?
They were the 5th place team.
Maradona? Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. They were the 5th place team.
Yeah.
And so I watched, I ended up watching the game in a bar at 2 o'clock in the morning just to see how it would go. And Australia held their own. I think they lost by 1 goal over the 2 games. Watched the second game. But that's the closest we got. And after that, I ended up coming back to the 86ers at the time, is what the team name was.
Yeah.
And since then, was a general manager, and then for the MLS era, was the president, and now I'm a club liaison. So yeah. 50 years. And
this is your anniversary, I think, the 50-year anniversary, if I'm not mistaken.
This is the 50-year anniversary. And even the years that I was with the World Cup, I was actually a direct with the Vancouver 86ers. So it's actually 50 years of constant involvement, which I wouldn't have it in any other way. It did feel along the way, because we were folding 3 or 4 times during that period of time. And all I can remember thinking was, I just don't want to get a real job, because I never considered what I was doing a real job. Right. It was a labor of love.
That's gotta be tough, though, when, you know, with going through that, like the team's folding. I mean, we were talking about the 79 season earlier, and I think the Oakland Stompers folded, and then like a week or two prior to the NASL season, they were now the Edmonton Drillers. So,
yes, that's right.
I mean, chaos that ensued within that league. Yeah. I mean, now you're with the MLS, and I definitely want to touch on that, of course. And by the way, we're talking with the legendary Bob Lanarduzzi, a club liaison with the Whitecaps. And if you want to watch their exciting brand of soccer, tickets are available at whitecapsfc.com/tickets. That's whitecapsfc.com/tickets. Bob, I want to ask you, because everybody, your name is synonymous with the NASL. What question do you get asked more than any other about the NASL?
Well, he's back to the NASL, Bob.
I have to. I have got to eat this up. I'll talk to this guy for 3 weeks straight.
The question, unfortunately, it's a bit of a negative one, and I think that stems from the multiculturalism that we have in Canada and in the United States. Wherever people come from, it seems like nothing is ever as good here
right.
as it is wherever they came from. And I get tired of that. Even now, people will say, it's not a good standard. And again, most of the time, it's from people from somewhere other than Canada and the United States.
Or who don't know the game.
Well, they think they do, though. That's right. The problem. Well, they got an accent, worst. Or then of course, they know what they're talking about.
Right.
But that's even now, I think if you talk about the great players that play, Johan Cruyff, by the way, just a sidebar here. We played against the LA Aztecs in a playoff game. That was actually the year we got to the final. Johan Cruyff came to close me down, and he left his legs wide open. And I actually put it through his legs. I did, but I didn't get it on the other side. It was a pass through his legs. And I tell that story to as many people as I can now. Because Johan Cruyff is doing the nutmegging normally, not
yes,
kidding.
Yeah.
So where was I going there? That was
you were doing a little homework.
Yeah, you were talking about the story, the question that you asked more than anything.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah. So it that was kind of the theme. And I would get frustrated and call people out. And I said, look, I'm of Italian heritage, but yeah, I can recognize and acknowledge something that's a half decent level. Plus, whatever allegiances you have to your club or your country elsewhere, take on a second team in the country that you're living in. And I'll tell you who did that the best, and they were a revelation for the MLS, is TFC. When TFC came in, they were filling that building. They were losing games regularly, but they were filling the building, and it was a fantastic atmosphere. And at that time, attendances in MLS weren't that good. And it wasn't long after that that, you know, all the clubs seemed to get what they needed to do. That's the other thing. When I compare MLS to other leagues in the world, I actually feel like what MLS did was really promoted the supporters' culture. Because even now, when I get people tickets to a game, they go, I ask them how they enjoyed it. Even if they're not soccer fans, most of the time, the first response they'll give is, yeah, that group behind the goal, they really provided a real lift to the game. Yeah. No other sport can copy that. You can't.
You know, Bob, I actually, an NFL executive, a very high ranking one, said to me that they were trying to figure out how to do that in the NFL, believe it or not, the big dog in town. And he
there
said they were showing the Seattle Sounders, you know, as they'd all march towards the stadium and how, you know, you want that sort of crowd involvement, not the corporate seats and all that other stuff that the game has become. And let me just tell you quickly a Johan Cruyff story. You know, I played one of my coaches in college was Kevin Welsh, and he played for the Washington Diplomats and things. He said that Cruyff complained about the grass. It was too high, he said. And he said to the groundskeeper, he goes, you got to cut the grass. And the guy cut the grass, and he came out after lunch, and there were three balls sitting there, and he hit a ball three times in a row into a garbage can. And he looked at the groundskeeper and he goes, that's a good height. That's right.
When Johan Cruyff comes up with that kind of suggestion and then does what he does, everybody listens, right?
He backs it up. Backs it up. Yeah. So let me ask you this. There's a big game coming up for the Canadian national team. Yes. By the way, you know, I'm not sure. I remember I went to college in 84, so it was sort of a tough time. A lot of great Canadian players coming out. I played a little bit with Tasso Gazoukas. Player named Kurt Manal, who was on the national level. It seemed like there was a dip in the amount of players coming out of Canada there for a while, like maybe in the early 90s or something. I don't know, but it seems like you've rebounded.
Oh, there's no doubt we've rebounded. Yeah. And some of it stems from countries of origin of players that are playing now that maybe hadn't even stepped foot in Canada. So that's certainly something that the best country that does that are the Jamaicans. I mean, the amount of players they get that are playing in the Premiership, and they've never been to Jamaica. So we benefited from that. I think we also benefited from MLS academies. The three MLS teams invest a lot of money. I mean, we're upwards of 3 to 4 million on MLS academies. So all those, you know, that in particular provides the young player an opportunity to get his feet wet very early. And some of them, and the best example is Alphonso Davies. We had him at 14, and within the span of 3 years, he just rocketed through U15, U17, reserve team, and then into the first team. And at every level that Alphonso graduated through, he wasn't just another player. He was the best player, and hence why he went as early as he did to Bayern Munich. So I think that we are producing more players. We can't keep up with the United States because of the population of the country. But now that it's gone to 48 countries, I don't even know if it's been established how many berths each of the confederations get. But CONCACAF had 4. It's going to be 6. We should never not qualify for another World Cup. So,
you know, the way they're doing it now is in the first round, they're breaking it up into groups of 3. And now in the first round, you're only playing the other team. So you're only playing 2 games now, which is interesting.
Yeah. At the World Cup?
Yeah, the World Cup. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. Now you have three teams that automatically qualify, although Mexico, Canada, and the United States probably would have qualified. Anyway, I can't ask any more NASL questions or else Kevin will slap me silly. So I'm going to fast forward. I'm going to fast forward to the MLS. You know, it's great to see old names like the Sounders, Timbers, and the Whitecaps. Was there any pressure to conform to names such as FC? Well, you have FC in your title, but FC or United and not have the Whitecaps moniker?
Never within the city or the province because of the
history.
How great a name.
The name.
Yeah. The Whitecaps name. Ironically enough, I'll give you another quick story here. I married the general manager's daughter in 1981. So I met her.
Team, Bob. That's what we
nepotism. Yeah. Nepo baby. You're a nepo baby, Bob.
So here's why I'm telling you the story, because we're talking about the Whitecaps name. My father-in-law was have you guys ever been to Vancouver?
Yeah, no. Beautiful.
Okay. I haven't.
The Lionsgate Bridge. You ever been over the Lionsgate Bridge to get to the North Shore? So you're going over the bridge. It was springtime and there was snow on the mountains and it was windy and there were Whitecaps on the water. Whitecaps on the water, Whitecaps on the mountains. What a great name. So that's my father-in-law. And in addition to that, he provided me with my wife of now 42 years. So that's how we named it
Whitecaps?
He was just driving.
How we named it Whitecaps. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a kind of tidbit of knowledge there.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
So Coach, TNT, you're playing TNT. What are your chances, you think, Canada, with qualifying?
I don't think there's any doubt we will, but they've actually produced some half decent results as of late. So, and you can never take anything for granted in these types of games because they have nothing to lose. There's people that probably give them a chance, but if you talk to the person that's not tied to one country or the other, they're probably going to say, "Well, look at the Canadian team. They should win." But you can't ever, but it's a massive game because of the competitive games you get by beating Trinidad and then going to the international championships. So, yeah.
So Mauro Biello is the head coach. He's the interim head coach. Is there a search for a national team coach?
Yeah. We've had a lot of changes at the CSA and they've only recently just hired a general secretary. And the word was that he should have a say in, or at least an opinion as to who the next head coach should be. So I would imagine that, and it could be Mauro, but I would imagine that something concrete would take place in the next. Yeah. Well, it won't happen before the game. But not long after that, I would think that there'd be a decision made.
Well, we're hoping to grab Klopp here in the United States for the national team. So we'll see how that works out.
That'll be nice. You see, so as a trailblazer, as Kevin alluded to earlier, as a true, genuine trailblazer of the sport in North America, tell me about the enormity of pride when you just go to all these games and you see 20,000 seats sold out and again, the crowd support and the cheering and just knowing that this time 50 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, it did not exist like this. Tell us what the feeling is like when you step onto the field and you just see the crowd.
There is an enormous amount of satisfaction is probably the best word because I've been able to hang in there in one capacity or another throughout the 50 years and to see MLS. Soon it will be at its cap at 32 and maybe 34. I don't know. And you look at franchise that are incoming, they're investing heavily in their franchises, training facilities, stadiums. So they know, the owners of those teams know, this isn't a league that's going to have a five-year upswing and then a five-year downswing like we did in the 70s. They know. And now the level of ownership, it's solid. Like you've got people behind clubs that, you know, have the money to invest to ensure that the game just keeps getting better. And I, you know, the one thing that I look back on with MLS and I remember, you know, the rules, the adoption of the designated player, which really came about because David Beckham came to the league. And then I look at, you know, the players in between the base salary and the DPs, Tam and Gam. That's made a huge difference because that quality of player wasn't available when you had to try and squeeze them into the actual cap itself. So those types of players have come in, and just the level of the game has taken off. So I have to give a lot of credit to the people at MLS in those early days that decided, okay, we need to do this a certain way. Because one of the things that I find around the world is owners have businesses that they pay attention to the bottom line. You get into pro sports and all of a sudden it's like, okay, I need that player, and they just drive the money that's involved up to a whole different level. But MLS have done a good job of not going loopy and keeping it at three DPs, and it's made for quality soccer for sure.
I think those of us that knew the past didn't want it to repeat, you know, in the present and the future. And I think
That would be embarrassing.
I was giving the shout out to Mark Abbott, who made that sort of centrally owned sort of thing, because those of us who have been through it, Bob, we're like, you know, we want this to be stable and give it a chance to build. I know for me, you know, you talked about ownership groups. You got real millionaires now in this game, and they want
real
to make
players.
And they're real investors.
Players. So Bob, I'm going to ask you a yes or no question. With all the investment that these people put in, do you ever foresee a system where relegation would come into play in the MLS?
No. You wanted a yes or no answer.
Yep. Nope. I thought that's no. It. I just was just curious.
I'll tell you why. I just feel like the purist wants to see promotion and relegation because that's what the rest of the world does.
Yes.
We're unique in this part of the world. So
yes,
I guess an example would be USL, presumably, would be a second division. That USL team that gets promoted to MLS is going to have to spend probably hundreds of millions more. So do they have that capacity? I just think it may happen, but I'll be long gone at that point, simply because the levels beneath MLS will become stronger and stronger. And maybe there is that. But I mean, it does keep people captivated. You look at the Premiership every year. You know, there's a handful of teams that are in the middle that aren't going to be in Europe and that aren't going to go down, who have nothing to play for anymore, but everybody else does. Like you're striving to get into Europe, or you don't want to go down because your investment is going to be eroded significantly.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you have my vote, I do relegation. Not that anybody's asking. And you know, you bring up the USL. There was a couple of teams last week. I think a team in New Mexico that was drawing 13,000 people. So the USL has some real support, also. So let's go with relegation. And you heard it here first. Bob Leonarduzzi said he wants relegation. And also, let's bring back the shootout instead of the penalty kicks. How about that?
He wants that to would be the NASL, Bob, is what he wants to
do. Wow. The NASL did, as much as they got criticized around the world for 6 points for a win and one for every goal up to 9 points, and you're finishing the season with 270 points.
Yeah, the Cosmos had like 262. I'm not gonna lie to you. I have a Memphis Rogues tattoo.
Memphis Rogues, fantastic. Kidding.
Little joke. Yes. It's actually the Tulsa Roughnecks.
Tulsa. There you go.
So, Bob, let me ask you real quickly before we get going here. We got to wrap it up. The Canadian Premier League, how's it faring? Is it healthy?
Well, I mean, let me answer the question by suggesting that what we just talked about as far as promotion or relegation, you need that pyramid of play to get you to MLS, and CPL are the second rung in that ladder. And then we have League One that's across the country, that's regional. So it's starting to shape up in a way whereby you have the three distinct levels. You have League One, you have CPL, and then you have MLS at the top of that. So by all accounts, it's ticking over, and it's doing what it set out to do. And it's giving young players who don't make an MLS team and have no other options, another option. And some of those players are going and playing there and then getting picked up by MLS teams again. So it's just more opportunities for young players to to at least stay in the game and strive towards getting to the highest level. And if you're Alphonso Davies, to the absolute highest level. He's going to go to Real Madrid soon. So, you know, who would have thought?
Yeah. Bob, so I got to say, the state of North American soccer is in good stead. And you were a huge part of that. So I just want to thank you.
Huge.
You're mentioning owners and stuff. I said, when I played, I would get my check and I would run down to the bank to cash it. Because that's the state of it. And it has come so far. And we're really happy about it. And you were a huge part of it. So
huge.
As a former player and everything, I just want to thank you for that. And thank you for being on Over the Ball with us.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Well,
thank you, guys.
Best
thank
of luck. Go Whitecaps.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to reminisce. I love it. So anytime you want to talk, just let me know.
Thanks, Bob.
Take care. Bye-bye then.
That was great catching up with him. Well, I hadn't ever met him before, but geez, Dave, every time NASL comes up, you get this starry-eyed look in your eyes like it's you're seeing a hot chick walk across the floors.
It's amazing. What a great part of my childhood. I love that league. Because as a soccer player back then, you really didn't have too much to strive to. And then when you grow up in the advent of the Cosmos, where they're actually getting 70,000 people with some huge names, it's hard not to leave an indelible mark on a young kid.
You know, and just think of the history. I mean, he left Canada as a 14-year-old
kid. Crazy.
It's a chutzpah. It was just amazing when no one was doing it. And then the love of the game. And you know, I've had this thought myself when I stopped playing soccer. I said, what am I going to do? I don't want to get a job. So I started doing stand-up comedy. So it was like, I empathized with Bob with saying like, he left at 14. He didn't go to college. He had nothing else. It was his life, his passion. And what do our fathers tell us? If you do something you love for work, you never work a day in your life. So congrats to him. And like for you and I, man, sitting there so impressionable, watching the NASL, the colors and I guess it was just our age at the time.
I'm watching old NASL games on YouTube. I know, don't be jealous, people. Watching old games and you see some of these games, like the field wasn't even lined. You don't even know where the goalie box is. There's nobody in the stands. But if you watch that 19...
too much. It had all the football lines, which is worse.
Exactly. If you watch the game that we referenced earlier, that 1979 playoff game, the Whitecaps versus the Cosmos, it actually was a very entertaining game. The quality was great. So check it out just for the fun of it.
Yeah, and you know, Bob, he mentioned something about MLS. It seemed real easy for people to criticize MLS, saying it's not up to the level. And you know what? That's just not true anymore. And I told you, like, a couple of weeks ago, I was in Argentina, you know, saying, watching Division One, it was right up there with it, Dave. It was right up there with it. So it's almost like saying, oh, people are rude in Paris, which they are. But it becomes like a cliche after a while. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, MLS is not up to snuff. No, it is now. It really is.
It's like saying English food is bad. Well, guess what, people? I love English food. I think our producer, Ken, you've enjoyed some English fare with me as well.
Wow.
Yeah. No sponsor either. How about that?
All right.
This podcast has been brought to you by Englishfood.com.
Yeah, the makers of warm beer. They don't do that anymore, though. They don't drink. They drink it cold now. So, all right. Well, that was good stuff. What do you got coming up this week, Davey?
All right. So this week, lots of good stuff. So my band is playing on Saturday and Friday and Saturday. Yeah. You don't ask enough questions, buddy. You shouldn't be on this podcast. You're not asking the right questions.
You're in a polka band. I gotta see them sometime.
No, I'm in a Weird Al cover band. How about that?
Are you really?
No. The name of the band is Jerry and the Newcomers, if anybody's interested. And then my guitarist Jerry and I also do a little acoustic thing too. So we're doing that Sunday. We're having a lovely meal with St. Patty's Day meal with friends. So looking forward to it. What about you, buddy? What do you got going on?
Thanks for the invite. St. Patty's Day. This is the first St. Patty's Day I'm not working in. I can't remember how long, because you look down the Rolodex of Irish comedians and you hire one. So I did Lake Tahoe, the improv there, for 20 years in a row. And wow. It just closed down last year. Couldn't quite come out of COVID. So I'm off this year. I'm going to drink some green beer, have some nachos, and I'll be good to go.
I think there's a guy, Patty McGillicuddy, who's stealing your thunder.
Oh, certainly. There's a lot of Patty McGillicuddies.
So, Kev, all right, so we have one end of the spectrum with Bob Lanarduzzi, and he appeals to perhaps a certain segment. But now, next week, we're going to skew much younger as we have DraftKings as our guest next week. So that's going to be quite a different little scenario for us.
That'll be interesting because, look, this is something that's come around in the last couple of years. It's just gone off the hook, and people are betting. And it's funny, on soccer, you know, my nephews, they never played soccer, but between, you know, DraftKings and betting on soccer games and then playing their, you know, what do they call it, the Xbox.
Yep.
All the soccer. They know all the players and everything. It's unbelievable. And so,
yeah, well, you know, I do. I think, you know, I think we should devote maybe one of our podcasts to Xbox and at least interject that because, believe it or not, the FIFA game actually did raise awareness for the sport, believe it or not. And I hear this from a lot of people who are not your typical soccer fans. So believe it or not, that did definitely enhance things for the MLS.
Well, I just wondered how my nephew knew all these outside backs and defender. I'm like, how do you know these people? This is unbelievable. Right? Deep in the chart. So he goes, no, they're on my team. And so anyway, and yeah, they can't kick a ball worth their life, you know, so, but they know how to bet the game. All right.
So that's next week.
All right. Yeah. So, you and the NASL need to get a room next week. That'll happen. Do that. All right. DraftKings next week. That's all the time we have today, everybody, on Over the Ball. For Dave Gallego, I'm Kevin Flynn. We'll talk to you next time on OTB.
Have comments or questions? Give us a call or shoot us a text at 727-914-9998. 727-914-9998.